Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, once again, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we revisit Brian's top movie on his list, Groundhog Day. Since we're coming at you on February 1st, we thought we would once again explore the facets of this most wonderful of movies in Brian's mind. And we are going to talk about potentially remaking and recasting Groundhog Day. Who today would play all the different roles that Bill Murray and Annie McDowell and Stephen Tobolowsky popularized so many years ago? Our top five will be top five remakes of all time. But before then, Brian, tell us where you are in the quest for 10,000.
As of this discussion, I am at 7,542.
So, and how many movies have you watched today?
Just one today. The final nominee for Best Picture that I had not seen, and that was Lion, with Nicole Kidman and Dev Patel. And it is a heartwarming story, but it was stretched to make it to 2 hours.
How many movies nominated for Best Picture?
Well, nine, and I've seen the nine nominees.
And what do you think is the best of those?
I like La La Land. I mean, I think it will win. Manchester by the Sea was good, but I think La La Land, of the ones nominated, I think it was the best. It wasn't the best movie of the year, but it's in that conversation, and it's about, to me, I think it's a deserved winner of Best Picture, if it
now,
wins.
Is there any other movie you've seen recently that you might say is the best movie of 2016?
I have, and it's a documentary that spoke to me called Life Animated. It spoke to me in part because I've spent some time trying to work with and do stuff for people that are mentally challenged individuals or you know, and that's a situation that means a lot to me. This is about an individual that had on the autism spectrum who his family was at their wit's end and had no way to communicate with him. He was pretty nonverbal. But they discovered by accident, really, that his mind was just processing the world differently, and he saw everything through the lens of Disney movies. Like that he had obsessively would watch them and had memorized every line of dialogue. So they were able to, through a series of trial and error, using an Iago like puppet or a stuffed animal, he was able to talk to his son through Disney dialogue. And from that, they were able to expand. Wow. And now the kid is now in his 20s and he lives on his own and he's functioning. And, you know, I mean, obviously, if you're severely on the autism spectrum, your life is going to be, you know, different than a life that did not have those sort of burdens. But he has a full life, and he's able to enjoy things that he would not have been able to enjoy had not those movies entered that space in his mind or whatever.
That sounds fascinating.
And it speaks on the power on how little we understand about how the human mind works, how quick we are to cast people aside and not try to find solutions for them. And it also speaks to the power of movies and what they can do and how the healing process they can be a part of beyond just their entertainment value.
All right. Well, listeners, tell us what you think still is the best movie of 2016 and see if Brian has already seen that or if he might add that on his way to 10,000 movies. You can drop us a line at 10K Movies, T-N-K Movies on Twitter, or at 10kmovies.com, Brian's blog, where you find this podcast and also can find from time to time written reviews of movies Brian has seen. I got to say, I'd like to probably live in a Disney movie myself right now, but that's a conversation for another time. And the conversation at hand is probably about another world I would like to enter into, a perfection of the soul, which we all could seem to use right now. So let's move into a discussion again of Groundhog Day. Now, last year at this time, we discussed Groundhog Day kind of in general, just kind of the things Brian most loves about this movie, why it's number one on his list of the over 7,400 movies he's seen at this point. So let's maybe start, Brian, just by recapping in a couple of sentences just what it is you love about Groundhog Day and what sort of new things you maybe continue to find as you watch the movie.
Well, I would say the number one reason, well, not number one, but one of the primary reasons I love the movie is because for me, I'm not a huge, necessarily a huge watch a movie over and over again kind of guy. I mean,
yeah,
we
discussed that before on the podcast.
It's not, I mean, I will, and I like enjoy it, but this movie, the more you watch it, the more it feels like you're in on the joke, mm-hmm. and I like that. I mean, it provides me a reason to like, because the more I watch it, the more I can like identify with the character that's there, and it becomes sort of like an immersive experience in a way that most movies aren't for me. So I, you know, that may, and you know, you find yourself like noticing little things or trying to notice things because you realize that's what he would be doing if he were living the same day over and over again. I like it because it's funny, but it's not, it's got a serious message there, but it's not, you know, it's open to interpretation. The message is not exactly clear at the end of the movie. I mean, it's there and you know that somehow it had to do with him becoming a better person, but you're not exactly sure what it is that tipped the scale to him being a better person. You know, because it's not quite, I mean, saying it's love is not quite true. Saying it's because he's willing to sacrifice it, that may or may not be true. I mean, it's just, you know,
it's kind of ambiguous.
Yes, and you know, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of ambiguity, but in this movie I really like. And plus, you know, I like that this movie doesn't try, most movies, and apparently the first draft of the script for Groundhog Day did this as well, most movies would, an executive at some studio would say, no, wait a minute, why is he trapped in the same day again? We need to have that explained to us. I like the fact that this movie doesn't care. Like, that's irrelevant to what the movie's about. It doesn't matter why he's stuck in the same day over and over again, and we don't need to know.
And then, of course, there's Bill Murray.
And there is Bill Murray. Now, here's the thing. I can't, you know, I can't take one without the other. So I can't tell you if my Bill Murray love is because of this movie or if I love this movie because of Bill Murray. I mean, they work together. So I'm not, I can't 100% say that it's not, you know, if someone, another actor, if I wouldn't be a big fan of that actor because they were in this movie.
Well, it sounds like it's a culmination of a lot of factors that makes this almost the perfect movie for you. And also I think what makes maybe a conversation about if the movie were going to be remade, right? Because that still seems to be something of a Hollywood trope and a trend. Could the movie work if it was a different set of characters set in 2017 rather than back in 1993-94?
There are a lot of movies that you could do with remaking, and the problem would be, you know, how different do you want to make it? You know, that's one thing that if you are doing a revival of a play, okay, you have some leeway, but you're not going to change the basic setting, the basic characters. I mean, it's going to be exactly the same because that, you know, that's the play. And you can change the staging or whatever, and you're free to do that. But the play itself is going to be. With movies, you know, you have to add a twist to it. Otherwise, people can look at the other one they have, and you know, and there's going to be a comparison. You know, if you do a restaging of Romeo and Juliet on Broadway, people have their own experience that they brought to, but nobody can look at them side by side because they don't exist in the same universe. You know, so with a movie, you know, if the movie doesn't merit it, I can just go watch the other one. I don't need to watch this. So you always have to do something different to make it worth somebody's while.
So if we were going to remake Groundhog Day, one thought is probably some of the things you said that the executives left alone in the original movie. They may not leave it alone.
Well, you'd have to have
in a remake. But what do you think would be the change? What do you think is maybe the most obvious change that maybe would be made to Groundhog Day?
We've seen a lot of this, and I'm not sure if it would work or not or be good or not. But I would imagine that some executive, would in an early meeting pitch the idea of a gender role reversal.
Right.
I'm almost positive that would be one of the early discussions would be, what if we made Phil into a woman? I mean, I just know that conversation would be had just because it feels like that's like we got the Ocean's 8 remake coming out now. We had the Ghostbusters. I mean, that seems to be something that studios are desperate for.
Well, and that was something that the original, you've said too, in some of your review.
There was an original draft where both of them were
stuck. Were both of them. So it might be that they would go back to something where you see it side by side even.
Yeah,
and somehow maybe sliding doors esque.
Well, see, and I am a big believer. If you're going to do that, if you were going to expand it to where they're both in stuck in a loop, I'm a lot of movies. I'm a big believer in if the story merits it, expanding it. I mean, stopping with this idea that we have to get it into a 2-hour movie. If you did something like that as a mini series, or a 4 to 6 hour kind of thing, where you could really develop the. If you're doing it as a 2-hour movie, you don't have the time. There's no way you can tell that kind of story in that kind of time. It can't be done. I mean, you'd just be overloaded with information. And I would just, that would destroy it.
Let's talk, though, about potential actors and actresses who could fill some of the roles with some of the same potential or some of the same cohesiveness that the original cast of Groundhog Day did. I think we need to save the Bill Murray role for the end. So let's start instead with the female lead with Annie McDowell. Who's a couple actresses that could maybe.
Well, it's coming to me right now. Somebody I think that has the same kind of like, yes, she's beautiful, but she's not like overwhelmingly, like unapproachable beautiful. It's believable that a guy like Bill Murray could be with Rita in this movie. That's the key. You got to have it. So somebody I think that could be close to that kind of level, Katie Holmes.
Huh. That's an interesting choice.
She has that sort of choice. I mean, even when she was on Dawson's Creek, the idea was she's the girl next door. And I think, as far as the vibe from Groundhog, now you might want to go differently, but the vibe from Groundhog Day is that Rita is the girl next door kind of a character. That's why he dismisses her at first. That's why he's not really interested in her because she is beautiful. But it's not, he's not interested in that, what she's interested in, which is a normal kind of life. He wants something, she's sort of folksy in a way. She has a very simple kind of idea of what she wants out of life.
And there's also kind of a maturity to her character or kind of a sense of a life lived, not so dramatic as she has a past, but that she's a grown up.
She is comfortable with who she is.
And I do that. Katie Holmes makes some sense to me. That'd be interesting. It makes me think that Hollywood, I don't think Hollywood ever recast with Katie Holmes. So maybe what we'll do is you'll offer who you think is best, and I might name who I think Hollywood would actually choose.
Hollywood is going to want to go after somebody. They're going to want Jennifer Lawrence, or they're going to want
Emma Stone. I don't think Jennifer Lawrence. I'm going to say you're creating try to something as original. As close to the original as you can. And I'll suggest to Hollywood try to make this a big blockbuster. So I'm going to go Anna Kendrick.
I love Anna Kendrick.
Because Anna Kendrick, I think, does have kind of some of the comedic presence that Andy McDowell had in that movie.
Here's the thing about the Groundhog Day as it was the 93 version. Name me a scene in which Andy McDowell is funny. Like, she is never funny in this movie. Like, it is always subservient to Bill. Like, that is.
But she does kind of have this charm where
it works. She has charm.
It kind of works. So.
Yeah, she does, but she's not telling the jokes. Well, and I'm afraid with Anna, I'm not sure Anna could be that sort of like.
Well, that's why this is the Hollywood. I'm doing the Hollywood blockbuster version. So,
I'm with you. And I love Anna Kendrick.
Anna Kendrick,
so
she skews younger demographic. So you're Katie Holmes, faithful to the original vibe. I'm Anna Kendrick, Hollywood blockbuster. We're going to make her funny. We're going to make her funny. Okay. So let's go to the Chris Elliott character, the cameraman, who I think is criminally underplayed in this movie. I know you think it has just the right amount of Chris Elliott.
I won't say I'm a huge Chris Elliott, although I'm a Chris Elliott fan. The person I'm thinking could maybe pull it off, because Chris Elliott, the character has a sort of like a creepy vibe, uncomfortable vibe, makes everyone uncomfortable. So I'm thinking maybe a Zach Galifianakis.
Okay, and Zach has been in, I think, some more kind of quirky, I don't know if you call them independent movies or not, but some maybe quieter films. I can see that. But also, he's been the block. That's my blockbuster pick as well. He can kind of go both ways as far as that goes. But in my blockbuster version, Galifianakis gets a chance to, you know, have at least one or two Hangover-esque, creepy, weird, awkward lines.
Or like just the host of Between Two Ferns.
Right. That's, so that's the place where our two visions align very well. Let's think about some of the other supporting characters in the film. Brian Doyle Murray played the mayor of Punxsutawney in the original. Who do you think you would get to play the mayor in this new remade version?
Well, now, you know, if you're going to make a remake, the trend is almost always to have somebody in the original cast sort of as a spot-on role, sort of an homage to the original. And I don't think you would have Bill replace Brian in the movie. But that could be a part where you would have Chris Elliott come in and be the mayor.
Okay. All right. And yours, I think that's actually where I would add Will Ferrell. Give him like two or three scenes, make him really weird and strange.
Why does the mayor need to be weird?
Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell.
Why does the man need to be weird?
It was a blockbuster. It's Will Ferrell. You just let Will Ferrell.
No.
You just let Will Ferrell run wild.
I mean, there are some other character actors. I mean, the mayor needs to be a character actor, but it needs to be a character actor that we're all sort of familiar with. I mean, you know, I could even see Dan Aykroyd as the mayor.
Mm-hmm. That might be good. That might be good too. But I think I'll still go with Will Ferrell. Two of the more maybe notable of the different people that Phil Connors runs into, one now because he's just gotten a lot more roles since Groundhog Day, is Michael Shane.
He only has like a throwaway run where he's the guy that says WrestleMania tickets. You know, that's what. But, I mean, nobody had any idea this guy was going to be something.
So for you, that'd probably just be some extra. That's really. I think John Cena would be excellent to say WrestleMania.
that would be funny.
Yeah, so John Cena in the Michael Shane role in my blockbuster vision. That brings us now to Ned Ryerson. Who should play Ned?
Well, if he's available, Stephen Tobolowsky.
Amen. And yeah, that for me is the homage slot in our blockbusters. Stephen Tobolowsky is the guy.
You know, now there are you could convince me that that's a role Will Ferrell could play very well. And also, the Stephen Tobolowsky role to me needs to be someone close in age to the Bill Murray role, unless you want to do some rewriting, which is possible. But I mean, the idea is that they're old high school, you know, classmates that are re-meeting here by coincidence. So, you know, you need to keep it within that, have an older Phil. I mean, Phil doesn't have to be 30, 40. Phil can be 50. Phil can be, that's irrelevant. But you got to keep them in that kind of range. So
who would be your Phil? Who could possibly replace Bill Murray in a remake of Groundhog Day?
Well, here's a name that's coming to me now. And then I'm thinking is like an off-kilter choice, but we know he has the range to be able to do it. And I'm thinking Bryan Cranston is a possibility for the role.
Okay. Bryan Cranston.
And another name that has that sort of like goofball charm is Steve Carell.
Okay. So depending on who tests better with Katie, that's probably who you might go with in your faithful.
I'm inclined to think Brian has the inside track, but the age difference in the two of them, which is probably about 15, 20 years, could be, you know, a problematic. But
I think in our blockbuster, our new Hollywood blockbuster, there's three names that I have in my mind, and I don't know who would be cast among these three. The names are Bradley Cooper,
ooh,
Ed Helms,
ugh,
or Jason Sudeikis.
you know who a dark horse?
I think
Sudeikis is the inside track.
I think it would be Sudeikis. But Ed Helms might be the dark horse.
If one of them
would make this just a blockbuster hit.
If you're going to go Sudeikis, do you know who I think might be your Rita?
Better than Anna Kendrick.
They've already,
not
Kristen Wiig, who you automatically think of. I'm thinking of another movie Jason Sudeikis was in with Alison Brie from Community.
Yeah.
She could be a very effective
I could see
Rita.
That. I think the studio would try to get Bradley Cooper. He'd probably take a hard pass, and then it's a matter of
Bradley Cooper is really interesting because like 2 years ago, I remember an article on the now defunct website Grantland that talked about how Bradley Cooper was like carefully plotting out and going to become like this superstar of superstars, and how he was being so meticulous. And he seems to have taken a couple of major missteps. One of them being Aloha, which was just a huge disaster and really is hurting. And also there was a mini backlash about American Sniper.
Well, I'll tell you, if we're talking a trend of huge disasters, I think any remake of Groundhog Day, even if it's a faithful adaptation like yours, definitely
is probably
version is destined for the scrap pile.
I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea. But I think if you took it back and did some meta, and maybe did a movie. Like they did with the movie Hitchcock, which was about making Psycho. If you did a movie about making Groundhog Day, you know, a movie about that experience, you had somebody that could be very good. That
could potentially work.
And could hit on a lot of the same themes in a way. Right. But that could be excellent.
Well, let's move on now to our top five. Let's move away from a potentially disastrous remake to at least some watchable remakes. As we talk about your top five remakes of all time, Brian.
Now, the bottom two on these are I could quibble on, and I could plug in some other movies fine and have no problem. But coming in at number five, the remake of Freaky Friday.
Lindsay Lohan.
I grew up three
movies that were actually good that she was in.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the original Freaky Friday with Jodie Foster. Because I watched it a lot when I was a kid.
Right, me too.
So I have a soft spot for it. But this one was just, I enjoy Jamie. I mean, I thought, dumb idea, why would you read it? Surprisingly competent.
Yeah, okay.
So, okay, coming in number four, it's a re. And I don't know how fair it is to talk about remakes of foreign films. Because technically it's a remake, but it's sort of like you're remaking a movie that no one here has seen. So
almost like a reinterpretation.
Yeah, it's not really necessarily, we're sort of talking about two different things, but having seen both, I can definitively say that the Mike Nichols directed English language version of The Birdcage is a far superior film than the French film.
The Cage of Follies?
Yeah, it's a much, much better film. And part of that is because Robin Williams is so just wonderful. But also, I think people forget, and I think it's a little understated of how wonderful Gene Hackman is in that movie.
Yeah.
In a role that really is not necessarily common for him. He's usually a pretty, I mean, he is playing a straight guy, but he's funnier in this movie than he usually is, I think.
And also probably is notable for a movie that shows the ceiling of Nathan Lane's range as well.
Nathan Lane has to play a stereotypical gay man. Like that is pretty much, I mean, with all, he's great at it. I'm not complaining.
All due respect, yeah, but that's pretty much.
But I'm just saying, Nathan Lane, I mean, he was in the People versus O.J. Simpson. He was the F. Lee Bailey role.
Mm-hmm.
He was competent in it, but it was, you kept expecting him to break out in a song and dance.
And with that, let's move on to number three.
A beloved movie for a lot of people, but for me, the remake just made more sense and was a much better film. True Grit. The Coen Brothers version of True Grit.
I like that one.
The original is John Wayne. It has a special, and I think it's starting to diminish because the people that hold him in this regard are getting older and or dying. But I think he has a special kind of like place as far as the American identity of masculinity, and I get that. But watching that movie, buddy, Glenn Campbell in it is just a ridiculous character. Ridiculous character. I mean, it just does not hold up. I mean, it was made in 69, and it feels like it was made in 69. This movie feels more accessible.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like the original, too, but the acting performances, the cinema, I mean, everything is just more modern.
It's a better movie.
Better put together in the later version, all right? Number two.
Number two, another foreign film that got imported over here and got to put a definitive spin on it. And this is Martin Scorsese's The Departed. The original film, now he only took the first one. The original film was actually a trilogy, became a trilogy, but he only took the first one and remade it. And it's just, it's one of Scorsese's best. It gets kind of underrated, I think. People forget about it. But I think, I think it's wonderful. It's Jack Nicholson and probably his last, like, hurrah, his final great performance before he had a few, whimpering efforts on the way out the door. But this was the last one that he really gave it something.
Yeah. Nicholson, I do have to point out, though, there are some inconsistencies in this one. The accents of that nature,
sure.
Especially with Leo and with Jack. As a matter
sure.
of fact, but I think it's a movie that shows Matt Damon probably at his best.
Well, and there has been
a couple of folks in that Mark Wahlberg, Martin
yeah.
Sheen,
Alec Baldwin.
Just roles that were kind of made for them.
Yeah,
and it's a good movie. It's a hard movie for me to watch again. You talked about rewatchability.
Yeah, I've seen it maybe twice, but yeah, it's.
I can't argue with any of your choices so
yeah.
far.
And number one, this is a remake that took a slightly silly concept and just expanded on the silliness, full of 80s excess, and a beloved movie of mine. This is the 1980s remake of Little Shop of Horrors.
All right, here's where we depart.
Eat me, Seymour. I mean, the original movie is fine, but it's cheaply done. It's got Jack Nicholson in it, which is bizarre. But it works in some ways, but the second one just took all of that crazy stuff. And it's just like everything that is a child of the 80s that you enjoyed about movies, they threw into one movie.
I just can't. That movie scared me as a kid so much.
I didn't watch it till I was an adult, so I can't speak
man.
For that. Now, apparently, from what I have read, that the original version of the ending was much, much darker.
Yeah.
Which is frightening to think about.
In the original ending.
Yeah. Well, like, but Rick Moranis in his, he's kind of a forgotten man at this point. But he had a period where, in his prime, where he was one of the, like, just home runs. You knew a movie with Rick Moranis was going to be at least marginally entertaining, right? I mean, even his bad ones were good.
I guess so. But, yeah, I just remember being really... freaked out.
But it had like all those guys in it, like Steve Martin.
I don't know that I would put that at number one, but
oh, I love it. I love it.
Your point of how it's, I think, real interesting. I think you can make a compelling case for each of these being better than their original, or at least on par with them. But listeners, you might disagree, and there may be other remakes that you want to mention. So please, again, feel free to do that at our Twitter feed, 10K, TENK Movies, or on Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. We ran out of time for this episode, but when we come back in a couple of weeks, we will actually dive into what was going to be our original topic, and that is the biopic movie as we move closer to President's Day. We'll take a look at some movies that depict historical figures and events.
And I'd like to say, real briefly, I know my friend Jamie, who's a longtime listener of this podcast, will be disappointed when we're not talking about biopics here. But rest assured, we will discuss the movie that she knows is coming in our next session.
It's coming, Jamie, so just hold on. Until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline
11.